This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 191, Robotic Loverboy. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including William Shatner's idea for a Star Trek musical, the Oatmeal's retelling of a famous Gene Roddenberry story, and some exciting news about our network. Then in the feature, we're joined by Women at Warp's Andy Vanderkolk and Zachary Frueling of Metatrex to discuss the TNG episode, In Theory. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's great to have you back here on The Ready Room. It hasn't been long since you were here, but it has been quite a while since you were in the co-pilot chair with me. How's everything going?
Things are good. It's really good to be back in the co-pilot's chair, because even when we did a Voyager Ready Room, I wasn't hosting with you because you had Larry, and I totally understand that Larry trumps me. I mean, I'm totally cool with that. I mean, I'm not bitter or anything at all.
I can tell.
No. I love
Larry.
That's
why Larry
keeps
sending me messages going, can you get Char to stop private messaging me? She's really upset.
Oh, I really wish he wouldn't have mentioned that. No. Just kidding. Love Larry. And it's very good to be back with you here on The Ready Room.
Yeah. And you've been very busy now since you have moved there to the land of entertainment. I see you running around the Paramount Studios and things all the time with our art director, Aaron Harvey.
Yeah, I mean, you name it. Paramount, CBS, we're doing it all, baby.
Looks like fun. And every time I see it, I think that, you know, Tokyo is a really cool city to live in, but I'm so far away from everything happening with Star Trek and the rest of the entertainment world.
Well, LA is definitely the place for entertainment. It is still the entertainment capital of the world, for sure. And it's kind of cool to be in a city where so many things are happening at any one given time. I mean, you never know what you're going to run into when you're around here. So it's been a nice adventure, and I am having a very good time. And yes, I am staying very busy, indeed.
Well, that's how Tokyo is. There's, you know, something going on all the time, which is wonderful. But speaking of entertainment, things that are entertaining, let's go ahead and jump into our first news story here. I'm sure that everyone listening to this podcast has heard all about this at this point. The fact that William Shatner is interested in doing a musical Star Trek to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the franchise. What do you think about that?
You know, want to know my really honest opinion on this?
Really? Okay.
I might get people a little infuriated here, but I'm going to say it. I think Shatner wants to do a musical because George Takei is on Broadway right now. There,
oh, really?
I said it. He's jealous.
I had not even thought about that. I wonder. I don't know. I mean, you know, Shatner, over the past decade, Shatner has released some really interesting albums.
And you could call them that.
Well, the album that he did in 2004 that was produced by Ben Folds, called Has Been, is a really great album.
I will agree with you there. That is his best work by far. The others, I'm really not into, though. That's just my opinion, though.
Well, Seeking Major Tom was also
it's a good album, but it took me a while to get into that one. Has Been, I loved from the very moment. And the way I got into Has Been was I was watching Jay Leno, and Shatner and Ben Folds and Joe Jackson came on and they performed Common People on the show.
Yeah, that's a great song. I gotta give him props on that one, because that is actually a cover that does better than the original.
It does, yeah, absolutely. And it's really, really well done. And I got into that album immediately. I bought the album after that. And the emotion behind all the songs on that album, it's really like Shatner really opening up and kind of bearing his soul. And the music's great, and the production's great, and it's really nice. So when Seeking Major Tom came out, I was really excited about this one. And so I got it immediately as soon as it dropped, and I found myself having a really hard time getting into it. But I kept listening to it, and now I think it's really a very good album. It's not as good as Has Been, but it's still a good album. And for those who haven't heard Seeking Major Tom, he's basically doing covers of... Some are heavy metal songs, some are just pop songs, because he's got like Planet Earth by Duran Duran on there. And She Blinded Me with Science, the Thomas Dolby track. But they're really fun, really well done. Then, 2 years later, Ponder the Mystery came out. And this is an album that I've just never been able to get into.
Yeah, I've had a really hard time getting into any of his other albums besides Has Been. For whatever reason, that one really clicked with me. And maybe it was Common People, because that was the first song that I heard, and therefore I gravitated toward that. And then as a result, I've listened to the rest of the tracks on that album and really enjoyed them. But the other albums, I've listened to it and it's like, okay, Shatner, what are you doing here? And it's just lost me. I can't completely get into the way that he does things sometimes. And so for a musical, I'm really ambivalent at best. I really don't think this is going to happen. I really don't know if I want this to happen. I don't think I would go see it, but I'm sure there's people out there who would love it. So, you know, if it happens, great, but I'm not going to care.
Well, do you see it as something that he's wanting to do on Broadway, or it's a musical TV special? Because on DS9, the writers wanted to do a musical episode. They never did one. We actually discuss it on The Orb. It's, I forget the episode number of The Orb, but I know that the title of the episode is A Nausicaan Musical. So if you want to hear about the idea, you can go find that on The Orb. But it almost sounds here like he's thinking of doing something that would be a musical TV special. But of course, you know, I mean, I started to say it's not going to be Broadway. Maybe it's off Broadway. But actually, with William Shatner in Star Trek, I'm pretty sure that if he were going to do a stage production, he would be insisting that it's going to be on Broadway proper.
Well, especially with Takei on Broadway right now, he's got to compete, right? And keep that feud going. But no, actually, I wasn't even thinking Broadway at all. I was thinking maybe he would do that one-man show again where, well, it probably wouldn't be a one-man show. He wouldn't be able to pull that off, but it would be a traveling show and he'd go to various major cities across the U.S. and maybe Canada and tour that way. That's what I was thinking. But a TV special, that seems really... Forgive me, Chris, that really seems yesteryear, where they just don't do TV specials like that anymore.
Right. And it's a little scary, too, because it makes me think of the Star Wars holiday special.
Oh, God.
Have you ever watched that?
No, let's not say we did.
I think it'd be great. Like, we could meet, you know, we could have Spock's parents come on the way we have Chewbacca's family in the holiday special for Star Wars. And
it's reminding me of all those cheesy, like, 70s holiday specials, you know. Oh, the Carpenters at Christmas. And then they've got their parents. And yeah, Donnie and Marie. I really don't want to watch that. I think there's a reason why those don't air anymore.
Well, what he says, and there's an article over on TrekNews.net with some quotes from him and some information. And he says that, I'm attempting to sell a 50th anniversary show, but so far I've had very little luck. Maybe because Paramount's going to do their own, but I don't know how they can do their own without me. I've never been contacted. I've been actively trying to do a 50th anniversary show. We had a big company say, what about a musical or a musical variety show? That got some traction, but nothing's coming of it yet. So one thing I will take from that quote is that this is maybe a little bit less of Shatner wanting to do a musical as much as a company proposed a musical and Shatner just wants to do some kind of show for the 50th.
Yeah, actually taking that into account, it does sound more like that, where a production company has approached him rather than he is saying, I want to do this. He's just saying, sure, I'd be on board. That would be fine. Of course, I want to be involved somehow because I'm William Shatner and how dare you do anything without me. But I don't know if this is really even that feasible. Do we want to see a musical with William Shatner?
I don't know. That's the question for everyone listening. So let us know if you want to see this or not.
Yeah, get on the Babel conference and do the poll, yay or nay. I really do want to know because I could be totally in the wrong here in my negative opinion that this wouldn't work. And if I am wrong, tell me. But I just don't think that this is the way to do the 50th anniversary. I think there's much more eloquent and appropriate and relevant ways to celebrate Star Trek's 50th anniversary. But I do know that there's people out there who would say, but we need something, anything out there to celebrate. And
if this is
what we get, so be it. I don't know if I'm on board with that. Sorry.
Well, I don't know, Char. I think that if they made it, and especially if it turns out to be really cheesy, it will become a cult classic. It will become this part of the Star Trek franchise that your kids and your grandkids have to watch. It's gonna be this little jewel in the Star Trek world.
Man, is it like subjecting your spouse to watching Star Trek V when they're not really Star Trek fans? Is that it?
Maybe. I don't know. But I would like to know what the listeners think. So as Char mentioned, the Babel Conference on Facebook, type B-A-B-E-L into the search field, and that will come up. Or send us a message, trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room. Or find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. And let us know what you think about a William Shatner Star Trek musical for the 50th anniversary. But I will. I do want to go on record as saying that I think that Has-Been in particular and Seeking Major Tom are great albums. And it's some really creative work by William Shatner. And actually, it's one of the reasons why I love William Shatner.
So tell me, Chris, would you want to see a William Shatner 50th anniversary musical?
Yeah, why not? I think it'd be fun. I don't know if it'll be good, but I think it would be fun.
Yeah, I suppose if you go into it with that attitude, you're going to get something out of it.
Why not, you know? I mean, if they can make Star Trek branded dog bowls and food dishes and dog collars and whatever, why not have a musical?
You know, yeah, I don't know. One of my favorite animated cartoons is Metalocalypse. It's on Adult Swim, and it's about a heavy metal band. They ended up doing a musical episode of that show. I didn't think that would work. So, and guess what? It did. So, you know what? I suppose anything is possible. It's just, it seems like there's so many other better ideas they could possibly pursue.
Probably. All right. Well, let's shift gears to our next story. This is a comic that was done by The Oatmeal at theoatmeal.com. And this is a story that many of you listening probably already know about Gene Roddenberry, but they've done it in a very nice visual form. And I'm just going to read through the story a little bit, but definitely go over and check this out so you can see the visuals. And it's in a nice format for the web as well, because you need to scroll down the page and you keep getting like frame after frame after frame. But it says, on June 18th, 1947, on a Pan Am flight from Calcutta to New York, an engine stopped working, which caused another engine to overheat, which caused a fire, which caused a panic. While the pilot attempted to land the plane, the 25-year-old co-pilot unbuckled himself. He went into the main cabin to help with the passengers. He sat next to a young woman who was alone. He told her it was going to be okay. He told her this as he watched the engine continue to burn. He told her this as he watched it fall from the wing. He told her this as fuel lines became exposed, fire overtook the aircraft, and the plane pitched downward. He told her this knowing that every single person on that plane was about to die. The plane hit hard, crashing into the Syrian desert. 14 people died instantly. 2 crew members survived, including the co-pilot. And with a pair of broken ribs, he went back into the burning plane, pulling survivors from the wreckage. Eventually, the wind turned and fire overtook the aircraft. And so they waited. Morning arrived, but a rescue did not. The co-pilot took charge and formed 2 search parties. The first party went in one direction. The second party, along with the co-pilot, went in the other, wandering into the desert. They eventually found a village which had a radio. A call was made, and the 22 survivors were rescued. As for the co-pilot, the crash changed him. After that, he didn't want to be a pilot anymore. He wanted to do something different with his life. He resigned from Pan Am to pursue a career in writing and ultimately television. His name was Gene Roddenberry, and he created Star Trek. And then they go on to say that this story is not intended as an ode to Roddenberry, although he certainly deserves one. Prior to working in television, he was a decorated World War II pilot, a plane crash investigator, and an LA cop. He survived 3 plane crashes. The story is intended to remind you that our journeys are short. Roddenberry saw life's ephemeral nature lit up against a backdrop of stars. He saw that we are all passengers pitching downward into the night. He saw that we're all helpless. So get up and help someone. And again, go to theoatmeal.com and check out this comic so you can see all the visuals. But Char, especially when they get to the end here where they remind us that he survived 3 plane crashes, when I think about how Star Trek has changed the world and how it has changed the lives of so many of us in a positive way, you know, it feels like Gene Roddenberry was destined to bring this to us. And can you imagine if he had not been able to?
It's kind of crazy to think about, right? Mm-hmm. First off, he survives 3 plane crashes. The odds of that are so incredibly slim. He's an incredibly lucky guy. But then something like that would definitely motivate you to pursue living to its fullest.
Yeah, I mean, you rethink your life, right? What are you doing
with your life? Yeah, you don't go through an experience like that and not reevaluate your entire existence. And so, yeah, I do feel like in a way it was destiny that he gave us Star Trek and wanted to change his life completely, going from being a pilot to being an LA cop to being a writer for television, and then ultimately giving us this big message of hope for the future in Star Trek. I think, you know, what he went through definitely had to have fed into creating that vision somehow. That, mm-hmm. yes, it's going to be okay. I feel like that's the moral of the story.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure that Zachary, who is joining us for the feature today, along with Mike Morrison, who do Matatrex, will listen to this and go, we can talk about that all day on our show. Was it destiny or not? You know, because they did shows on determinism and free will recently.
Right. Yes. But yes.
It is interesting when you look not only at Star Trek, but at so many things in our lives and in our history, how the death or the survival of an individual really changes the world and changes the course of history. And I know for many people, probably not those listening to this show, but maybe for the general public, Star Trek, it's not that big of a deal. It's a TV show, right? But for so many of us, it's not just a TV show. It's a way of looking at the world. And mm-hmm. it's a philosophy that helps us, as this says, help other people and try to help other people and try to make a difference. And you could argue that if Gene Roddenberry had not survived those plane crashes and had not been able to create Star Trek, well, someone else would have. But then if you look at all the entertainment that we have today, how many things are there like Star Trek that have the power that Star Trek has on such a deep level to move so many people? Certainly there are other franchises that have fandoms. In fact, fandoms even bigger than Star Trek has. But I don't know that they have the message and the material to make a difference that's as strong as the difference that Star Trek makes.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I think a lot about what contemporary sci-fi does, and a lot of it is so dystopian. And Star Trek has always been a message of hope that things are going to get better in the future. We're going to overcome a lot of our problems. And I think one of the big reasons why people like us gravitate towards Star Trek is we want to believe that. We buy into this. We want it to happen. We want to help create it. We want there to be a world where we have overcome so many of the problems that we face in our daily lives, whether it is racism, poverty, disease, hunger, you name it. In Star Trek, that is all gone. And we see that and we think, I want that. I everybody should have that. And so that is the ultimate, I feel, message of hope. And for some of us, that's what keeps us going, especially when the world can be incredibly unkind. Yeah. And so it's very powerful. Absolutely. There's a reason why Star Trek has survived for 50 years. That's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And the world seems to get worse day by day. And so you need something to hang on to like that. So.
Well, I feel like we're headed right into the chorus of DS9's past tense, part one and two, where things are going to get a lot worse before they get a lot better. We're headed right toward those sanctuary districts, and 2024 is not that far away.
Yeah, it does feel that way. So, but the message here behind this is a very positive one.
Yes, sorry, I don't mean to be so negative.
No, but that was the point of, you know, Gene could see the world being negative and being difficult and wanted to give us that hopeful future, which he did. So go to theoatmeal.com and check out this comic and see the great visuals that they have with it. And it's a really nicely done piece. Well, let's go on to one last thing we have here in news. And this is actually a little bit of our own news. For a long time now, our listeners have been asking us where they can get t-shirts and things like that. With the Trekafilm logo and all the other great artwork that our art director Aaron Harvey creates and posts on Facebook. And we're really, really happy to announce that we have now launched our store. The Trekafilm store is open. It's based on Redbubble, although you can also see the artwork if you just go to trek.fm/store. And clicking any of the items at trek.fm/store will then kick you over to the Redbubble page. And you can see what's there. And Shar, you did all the work setting up the store. Aaron did the beautiful artwork. And you guys worked together. And then you set everything up on Redbubble. So tell everybody about what they can get there. And, you know, even beyond shirts and all.
Yeah, it's not just t-shirts, guys. Because even though we've had people screaming at us, almost literally, for t-shirts, Redbubble has an awesome advantage over other stores out there online where we can sell our products in that you can get a whole range of products. And I was absolutely astounded as I set this up where you can do incredible things like get a throw pillow, you can get an iPhone case or an Android case.
They even have die-cut stickers, which is really cool.
Yes, I love the stickers. The stickers are incredibly cool. I'm going to order a few of those myself, as a matter of fact. But there's just so many cool things. And even as far as clothing goes, you have a lot of options where, ladies, if you want a fitted t-shirt, if you want a hoodie or a sweatshirt, we've got all of that for you. There's a lot of stuff to explore in the store. And so I want everybody to go check it out. See all the wonderful designs that Aaron has made for us over time on our products. And see what kind of products you want to buy, because they're very cool. I mean, I'm not just saying that either. I mean, I would look in this store if I didn't know anything about Trek FM and say, wow, this is cool stuff. I really want to buy it. Also, as a testament to Redbubble, the Lizard Baby shirt that I wore to Star Trek Las Vegas last August came from Redbubble. It's good quality. I've washed it several times since then. It's holding up. And so, you know, their products may not be cheap. You know, you're not going to get t-shirts for $6 or even $10, but I can tell you that they're going to last. So you're getting good quality, which was definitely a consideration that we had with who we wanted to go to. We didn't want to just sell junk.
Yeah.
And so you're going to get a good product and you're going to get a great design on it. And so I'm really excited to hear the response that people have once they take a look at this.
And keep in mind that when you buy, let's say you buy a $22, $25 shirt, you know, we're not getting $22 or $25 out of that. We're getting a couple of dollars.
And no, we wish.
So, you know, our margin on that is quite small. So we're not making tons of money off of this, but people have been asking us for shirts for a long time, and we wanted to make sure that people could actually get those. And also it helps you spread the word about Trek FM when people see you wearing mm-hmm. your Trek FM shirts.
Absolutely.
And also that little bit does help, you know. I mean, if enough people go there and shop, then it does start to build up, and it helps us cover some of the costs of operating the network. So that's wonderful as well. As for the designs that we have up there right now, you can, of course, get shirts with our beautiful new logo that Aaron designed, the Trek FM logo, both in a light version and a dark version, the Lizard Babies shirt, which Char just mentioned, as well as Free Enterprise and the Maroon Monsters. These are all from the Bridge Mates game that Earl Grey plays. These are the mm-hmm. teams. Lizard Babies being the Journey team, Maroon Monsters being the Standard Orbit team, Free Enterprise being the winless Earl Grey team themselves. They have still never managed to win their TNG-based game.
Yes, but thank goodness there's plenty of letters left in the alphabet. And you actually see that in the design where A, B, and C are currently crossed out. They're on version D. We'll see if they get to E.
Let's see. Now, Matthew and I, we have not yet competed in Bridge Mates as the Orb, although we're thinking that our team may just be called the Cisco.
The Cisco, that makes a lot of sense, but you know, to get to the championship, you're going to have to go through us first, me and Tristan. Right.
We also considered Profit Balls as a name. But
Profit Balls?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, because orbs.
Sorry,
you know,
my 12-year-old self is giggling. You said balls. I think the Cisco is the better team.
Yeah. You can also get, speaking of the Orb, you can get the Orb Spring Wine Company shirt, which is a long-running joke on the Orb between Matthew and me about Bajoran Spring Wine and the business that Matthew intends to open one of these days. There's also Starboard Shocks, Portside Panthers. There is a really nice word cloud shaped like the Enterprise with the names of all of our shows and some of our catchphrases in it. And
yeah,
of course, there's the very, very popular Never Forget Pulaski Banged Riker's Dad.
I want to know just how many shirts or how many of these shirts that the ladies of Women at Warp or alone are going to buy. Because they will not let anybody ever forget, especially Andy, who is going to join us later today for the feature.
So two other designs that are in there right now. There is Ninja Cat, which is, of course, a creation of Andy's in terms of Ninja Cat. And then Aaron did the artwork. And that comes from Assignment Earth, the TOS episode. And then there's, I love this one, the retro 80s design, trekking through the 80s on 104.7.
That's right, baby. Put on the leg warmers and turn on the Walkman.
It's pretty awesome. So anyway, please check this out if you've been wanting to get some Trek FM merchandise. And if you haven't been wanting it, but you think now it sounds kind of cool, please go check it out. Again, it's on Redbubble. The URL to get there is redbubble.com/people/TrekFM. Or again, you can just go to trek.fm/store. Click on one of the designs you see there, and then that will kick you over to Redbubble. And we just really thank everybody for your support of us and our new store.
Absolutely. And I want to add, this is not going to be the only merchandise that you can get. Down the road, we plan on debuting more designs, more products. Aaron's already hard at work on stuff that's going to specifically work for specific products, like a mug or a throw pillow or a journal or notebook design. I mean, he's already hard at work on this, and he's come up with some really cool stuff. And I'm just really excited, for one thing, that we did debut the store, finally. Yep. But then also that this is such a platform to make such really incredibly good stuff. And Aaron is so talented that we're going to have some incredible things for you, especially as the holidays approach. We're going to really pull out all the stops and try and get you some really cool stuff and entice the heck out of you.
I will say there are a few things that Aaron has created that are incredibly awesome. And if we do get those out there, if we decide to actually produce them, you'll be really blown away by a few of the designs.
Yeah. Aaron does amazing work for us, and I could not be more grateful to be working with him because he is top notch.
So, Shar, that's everything we have in news. So let's go ahead and bring Zachary and Andy in and talk about TNG. The last person you would expect to be a ladies' man aboard the Enterprise D is Data. But that's kind of what happens in the episode In Theory. And he goes around and asks for some interesting advice from his fellow crewmates. And today we're going to talk about this episode. And to help us do that, we're joined by, from Women at Warp, Andy Vanderkolk. Andy, welcome back.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here and to have you here with Shar, which I understand this is the first time you guys have ever recorded together.
Yeah, but everybody step back. Maybe, you know, hide your kids.
Yeah, definitely hide the kids. Hide the husband, too. This is going to get off the rails really fast. We were joking on Twitter that you were going to be cutting out at least 20 minutes of this episode, Chris, and I intend fully to work with Andy on making that number higher than that.
It could be. You know, the listeners, we sometimes talk about the fact that there are some uncensored Ready Rooms out there, and I believe that they all involve you, Shar.
Why, thank you. That's a huge compliment.
All right. Also joining us tonight from Metatrex is someone whose hair is looking particularly silky tonight. It's Zachary Fruling. Zachary, welcome.
Thanks, Chris. It's always great to be back on the Ready Room. I'll see if I can get a word in edgewise with Andy and Shar tonight.
Oh, no. You have no shot. It's just going to be filth everywhere.
Total filth. Smut, 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 smut.
All right. Good luck to us all. And I should also mention, of course, that Zachary is associate producer here on the Ready Room as well. So thank you for that, Zachary.
And I'm also a mirror universe version of myself with a goatee tonight. So
that's right. Yes. If listeners could see you here on the video, you have grown a goatee. So I'm really worried about what's going to happen in this discussion tonight, but we'll
never
see.
Can tell.
Evil Zach is going to come out.
All right. Well, let's start off as we always do with a synopsis and our initial thoughts. Synopsis for this episode is pretty simple. A crew member named Jenna falls for Data. He tries to have a relationship with her. He gets advice from the crew. And in the end, as you would expect, it doesn't really work out. That's pretty much it. There's also this B-plot thing going on, but yeah, it's really all about Data. So that's the synopsis, if you haven't seen this in a while. Do go watch it. It's a very funny episode, as I think our discussion will bear out here. So let's get on with initial thoughts. Now, Zachary, I think you were the first person to recommend this episode. So what are your initial thoughts here?
Yeah, this has always been one of my favorite episodes. I was thinking that it's actually really hard for me to get a perspective on this episode. I've been watching this since I was a young teenager, right around the age 12 or 13. So, you know, Data being bad at romance really resonated with me when I was that age. So this has been one of my favorites. I'm kind of a romantic guy in general. So this is just a classic fun episode. I love the character moments. You know, it's a lighthearted episode, like we're going to talk about in a little bit. You can probably ditch the B plot, but it's just a fun, lighthearted character episode. This is what I love about these characters.
How about you, Andy?
I basically sum up this episode as Data gets a girlfriend and boring space shenanigans happen. the Data gets a girlfriend part is fun. I enjoy it. It does actually get a little bit sad towards the end, which I like. It adds a bit of an emotional resonance right at the end after, you know, you've been laughing through some of his mishaps, his romantic mishaps. So overall, I enjoy this episode. I wouldn't say it's, you know, one of my favorites or anything like that, but it's a solid one.
How about you, Shar?
I like this one. It probably is among my TNG favorites, if not just my overall favorites of Star Trek in general. And I think it's great stuff for Data, and I think there's some great messages in this story, but telling it is also a lot of fun to watch. There's so much good stuff here, and so I'm really looking forward to our in-depth discussion of it tonight.
Well, I'm with all of you guys. It's a really fun episode. I had not watched this for a few years, actually, until I watched it to prep for the show here, and I did forget how funny Brent Spiner is in this episode and with the lines that he delivers. He has so many wonderful lines. And it does get sad at the end, which is nice and gives the story a bit more substance. It kind of gets sad along the way too, though, because if you're watching Jenna's reaction and you know, like, she's setting herself up for this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, and it's something we're going to discuss a little bit later on, if you look into the future, you know, there will be a time where I think humans and robots, or androids in this case, probably will have relationships. And how is that going to work when, by definition, android can't have emotions? The other thing here, at the end of the episode, Jenna says that, you know, I got out of a relationship with an unemotional man, and then I got into one with a man who is incapable of having emotions. But I do question if that's actually true. I'm not sure that Data is completely free of emotions in this episode and through the series. So we can talk about that a bit also. And I'm talking pre-emotion chip here. But anyway, let's just jump on in to the meat of it here and talk about Data in a section that I like to call Robotic Lover Boy. Which
it sounds like a David Bowie song.
Well, it does.
Well, I was going to say it would be a fantastic name for a band.
That too.
Well, I was going to say, Data has all the moves at the beginning of this episode, but he loses it about 10 minutes
well,
in.
Well, that's because at the beginning of the episodes, Data's just being him. It's right. When he tries to imitate what he thinks love and relationship should be that he starts to really get creepy. It's
right,
when he's
okay,
being Data.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought that was creepy, because
I was cringing.
Oh, there's a lot of creepy stuff, yes.
Yeah, I call him Harlequin Loverboy when he starts just regurgitating all these things that he's absorbed from his research. But yeah, he's just got this really weird, smarmy look on his face, and then the way he's completely overdoing everything is just really, really bad. Especially this early in a relationship, maybe a year the road, honey, I'm home would be completely appropriate. But this is how old? 5 days? That's a bit much.
Yeah. But this is kind of what it's like to go on a first date or something, right? You write a little script for yourself, a little program. You've got the do the hair function. You've got the make dinner function. You've got the go for the goodnight kiss function, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's the whole point,
Are these all of your subroutines?
But it's
I have
true.
A few more
like,
than that.
You're just trying to learn from what other people say works and what you've seen, like in the movies and whatnot.
Especially when you're first learning, like, you know, me at 13 or Data, you know, for the first time.
Right,
you're
going to
do
question what his source material is, because the way he's using it, it's like he's getting it all from Saturday Night Live, like ladies man sketches, like here's my Cabassier and let's, you know, dim the lights. And it's just like, no, stay away from me, creepy robot.
Speaking of what works for other people, I love when he brings her the flowers and he says, Commander Riker suggested this particular flower. He said it had worked for him in the past.
Yeah, and he just opens his arms. He's like, okay, I paid straight my out, flower right. toll. Where's my lovin'? It's like, no, Data.
But,
you don't just like put
says,
coins in a woman and like fun times pop out.
But when he says that Riker told him it has worked for him in the past, the look on Jenna's face, too, is like, wait a minute, Riker told you it worked for him in the past? What am I in for here?
And how many people did you talk to?
What kind of a girl do you think
I am? Oh, man. It's so good.
And those are like the least attractive flowers. Did you notice that? I mean, they're orange and, you know, they're not the most attractive
things. They're okay, but they're not roses.
They're okay. Very 1990s.
I don't know. Like, roses might be a little over the top, because we have to remember that this all happens, like, within, what, 2 days at the most?
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like,
any flowers would be too much then.
Kiss. Now I'm bringing you red roses and saying, honey, I'm home. And, like, it's all very fast.
Might as well
be engaged. Slow down, Eager Beaver. Yep.
Like, they meet, and, well, not meet, but we meet her, and they're going out, and they break up in the course of, like, 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. More or less. I mean, that is very typical of 13-year-old first-time relationships, right? I mean, Zachary, seriously, that is probably the best relation to human development you could possibly make. I mean, that's how it goes, right?
Yeah. It's that awkward, let me tell you.
I mean, I remember being in sixth grade and being on the bus and being like, well, Allison and Eric are going out. And then at the end of the bus ride, they were like, well, they broke up. It was very dramatic.
That's Data and Jenna.
Yeah, and like, and at that age, it's like all you want to talk about. You want to ask everyone, you know, what do I do? What do I do? And Data asks everyone.
Yeah, should I hold his hand? And should I share my lunch with him? Should I sit next to him at lunch? These are very deep, probing questions.
I like how in Star Trek, they have to put information on a pad and then carry it somewhere else in the ship. Mm-hmm. Why didn't Data pass a note to Jenna, or Jenna pass a note to Data?
Well, you know, yeah, he should have. But, you know, a few years later, we have Seven of Nine instant messaging the Doctor via pad. They just hadn't thought of it yet. The technology in real time just wasn't quite there yet for that. We got to give him a little bit of slack.
See, now I'm just picturing Data, like, handing her a note, be like, be my girlfriend, yes, no, maybe.
Yes,
check the box.
But there are buttons. No, you have to press which button.
Well, I love Data's description that Jenna gave him a very passionate kiss, as if he had any basis for comparison, and it's about the least passionate kiss I could imagine.
It's very chaste.
Like, don't smear the makeup, you know?
It's very chaste. It's very clearly her kind of like testing the waters and seeing if there's anything
there. For Data,
there.
It's a very passionate kiss.
I mean, she starts with a kiss on the cheek, you know?
Well, and in between, Data, he really goes all formal on her, like an officer again, and then she calls him Commander, and then after that, then she goes in for the kiss. But he describes it to Guinan as well as, you know, she gave me what could be described as a passionate kiss. And then Guinan just lights up, like, really? Tell me
more.
She
loves it.
I love that scene. She's like, oh, I want to know all the dirt on this.
She's like, let me get my notepad so I can take notes because I need to write this down. Like, she's so excited. It's cute.
Totally,
she puts
is.
Down her green and blue liquids, pouring the green drink, puts all that aside. Data, you have my full attention, Data.
Yes. So cute.
And if you fast forward to what we know about the relationship she has with Picard, what we learn in Time's Arrow, that, you know, they've known each other really for so long, I can see her then going and sitting down with Picard, and she's telling him all about Data, and they're like, yeah, that's so cute.
Do you suppose that's why Picard elected to not give Data any advice whatsoever? He's like, I am not participating.
That's one of my favorite lines.
Picard's like, don't talk to me about children or women.
Yeah.
And then Riker's like, come talk to me about women. I'll be very happy to tell you everything that I know.
Yeah.
It's so great that well, we should save this for the next section, but the advice that Riker gives him, let's talk about that then. Because what I also want to talk about here, though, is, like, your reading of Data, when this is a new situation for Data, really. I mean, he had his little tryst with Yar, but that was when they were under the influence. And Data's just trying to do his job, and then suddenly this crewmate starts coming on to him a bit, or, you know, showing interest to him. And it's very awkward for Data. What do you think, though, about this as like a character development episode for Data? What do you think, Char?
Oh, I think it's huge. This is a lot of growth for Data. It's, yeah, a lot of firsts. Maybe not so much his first kiss and maybe not so much his first time, but his first relationship, yeah, this is a biggie, and he is learning a lot. We might have not seen a bunch of immediate like growth and experience stemming from this right off the bat as TNG progressed, but it made a big difference in Data, I'm sure of it.
I found it interesting that he said early on that he really looks forward to the time that he spends with her. And that doesn't sound like the comment of just a machine, you know, just algorithms. It seems like there's something more there. And I've also always felt that he has a connection with Geordi as a friend that he doesn't have with the other crew members. So it seems that even though he doesn't have the emotion chip at this point, you know, there's something else going on there. When you have calculations that complex, I guess they take on a life of their own. That's sort of the the idea behind artificial intelligence and how it may grow. But I think it's interesting to see how he starts to see what Jenna is doing, and he wants to pursue that and see where it goes. And if he's really devoid of emotions and incapable of emotions, I'm not so sure that he would even pursue that.
I've never bought that Data doesn't feel anything. I feel like he may not have human style or human level emotions, but a lot of his decisions seem to be emotionally based. And the big one for me is the same one as it is for you, Chris, which is his friendship with Geordi. And it's just, I'm sorry, there's feeling there. There's mutual friendship, and you can't have that with no emotion whatsoever. But I do think that they had to at least explore the idea of what love would look like for Data. And so I'm glad that they did, because it's definitely, it's a huge part of humanity. I mean, not everyone, you know, needs to fall in love, but it is a big part of what, you know, humanity is all about. So it's, if we're talking about an arc that goes over several seasons about Data trying to become more human, this is an obvious story to tell.
It strikes me, I promised I wouldn't go all philosophical on everyone here, but I can't help it.
But that's why
bit.
We bring you on.
I know.
That's
why you co-host our philosophy podcast.
We bring you on for philosophy, and Char and I come on for filth. I mean, that's
but
why.
But this is such a lighthearted episode. I don't want to muddy it up. Right? But it strikes me that Data, it has all the behaviors of someone who's experiencing these emotions, right? One theory of mental states or of emotions is called behaviorism. The idea that it just, what it means to have these mental states or to have these emotions just is to manifest in certain behaviors. And Data has all the behaviors you might expect. Now it's sort of simplified and childlike, and you know, it's a little robotic, but you know, he's asking all of his friends, he's bringing flowers, he, you know, all the things he does in the episode are behaviors any one of us might do. You know, from a, maybe from a 13-year-old perspective. But so you know, from that perspective, Data is manifesting all the behaviors. So why not think that he has the emotions to go along with it?
One thing I found incredibly fascinating about this episode was trying to figure out how much of it really was emotion-based as opposed to Data just regurgitating what he's learned from all this research that he did. And is he just going through the motions, or is there something real there? And I don't know. My conclusion is that it's a little bit of both. And maybe it's more of like a 60-40 where he's mostly just regurgitating what he knows because he doesn't know what else to do. He's got to figure this out, right? I mean, it's his first time he's doing this and he doesn't know what to do. And I find that incredibly interesting because, as you said really early on, Chris, chances are humanity is going to be dealing with this sometime in the very near future, where somebody's going to fall in love with artificial intelligence, whether it's an android or a robot or what have you. And how is that going to go? It's going to be very interesting. Yeah.
It's like Data's doing his own little sociology experiment.
Android love.
This is interesting to me. Before I compare two things here within Star Trek, I do want to say I agree with you, Char, that there's some emotion there. I think that what we see is a majority of him just regurgitating things, but it's because he doesn't know what to do. And at the root of it, I think there is some sort of emotional element there that he is interested in her and interested in pursuing this, but he has no idea what to do, and his crewmates aren't really giving him any particularly useful advice. And so he's taking the android approach, which is, let me look into my memory banks, find out everything that I know about human love, and then try it. And he's basically like throwing things against the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm actually really disappointed he didn't do an ode to Lieutenant D'Sora.
Nothing ever will top Ode to Spot. Nothing. It is the pinnacle of TNG achievement.
You know, what I think we didn't see in the aftermath of all of this is Emo Data in post-breakup stupor. He writes the ode to Jenna.
Yeah, that was 14-year-old version of myself. 13-year-old me was, you know, Data.
Okay, so maybe we got to give it a year for Data we needed to get into his emo phase, dye his hair black, and put it in his face. And then he's like, Jenna, you broke my heart. You ripped it to pieces. How dare you? It bleeds.
And then Data will become a huge pop star, just like Taylor Swift, by writing odes to all the people that he's broken up with.
And then he dyes his hair platinum blonde and wears bright red lipstick.
I'm really trying to picture what Data's breakup music would be, and my mind is just like bouncing all over the place.
That's all his personal logs are, just song lyrics.
So many possibilities with breakup music.
So let me go back to the sociology thing that I was going to mention. It's interesting that you bring that up, Zachary, because there's a parallel here between what Data's doing and what T'Pol claims to be doing on Enterprise with her initial relationship with Trip. Because after T'Pol and Trip have sex for the first time, when Trip feels like, you know, there's something there and they have a relationship going, T'Pol tries to shut it down by saying that it was all an experiment.
Yeah,
you know,
liar.
She just wanted to experience human emotion and human sensuality.
No.
And there's nothing more to it there. Of course, as a viewer, you know that she's completely lying and why
Full
she's saying that.
Sure, total denial, yeah.
But she takes that approach, and you could also look at it here because, again, Vulcans supposedly being free of emotion, which of course we all know that they're not. And of course, T'Pol's not because she has the effects of the Trillium, but it's sort of an interesting parallel here. You could compare those two episodes. Like, Char, you guys are always comparing episodes onto The Journey, mm-hmm. which is a very interesting approach to examining Star Trek. And there's a loose parallel here anyway.
The difference, though, is that Data seems downright eager in this episode, I think.
Well, yeah, Trip seemed pretty eager to me, Zachary.
Right. He certainly but was willing.
He seems curious.
I think Trip was all about it.
Data does. He seems curious.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
which again is
that,
an emotional response, right? A computer is not going to be curious.
Right? Because without that, he would have just said, this is inappropriate. Please don't touch me. But he didn't.
And he's cautious about the dangers of hurting Jenna.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
A little bit in the discussion with Counselor Troy.
Which I was really glad she brought up, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we see the reality of that happen at the very end of the episode. I mean, Data can delete the subroutines that he considers relevant to this relationship. And granted, mm-hmm. he has the memory, but she's the one who's really going to be picking up the pieces here.
But I love that scene with Data because, you know, on the one hand, his facial expression just looks, he's trying to keep it neutral, right? It's supposed to be kind of a neutral, I'm going to delete the subroutines and, you know, and it hasn't affected me. But the look on his face just always struck me as sadness. So the dichotomy of the sadness on his face with the harsh reality that he can just delete the subroutine.
Well, the whole scene is one of sadness, actually, because it's also nice that they end it with him blowing out the candle. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's the end of the experiment, but
it's a metaphor.
Right.
Yes. Yeah,
right. We need a t-shirt that says, it's a metaphor.
So, okay.
But yeah, it is sort of a sadness there. And it can be a sadness for Jenna. I think we all feel a sadness for her, even mm-hmm. though she walked into that situation and she had to know how it was going to turn out.
Well, but I don't know. She doesn't seem to have the greatest sense of what works in relationships for her. She's just barely figuring this out, I think.
Oh yeah, no, I don't mean that she really knew. I'm just saying, like, as a person, she should be able to know that she's not going to be able to have an emotional relationship with Data.
Oh,
I mean, she
serves
with him on the crew.
If she would have
thought
about it for a millisecond, she would have kept Data in the friend zone. But no,
I like that we got character growth for her. Like, she actually ends the episode in a healthier place. Like, she's recognized her bad habits and her romantic past, and hopefully I like to think that she will find the guy that is what she's looking for. And I do think that it's good that we had a scene that really hammered home the point that she can't be an experiment. She's a person, she has feelings. It can't just mm-hmm. be like, oh, look at Data, be funny. There's another person in this equation that can get hurt. So I was really glad to see Troy bring that up. And I loved that Data, like, took the time to even say that. He's like, I can't be hurt. She can. And I think that's important. And it also makes it a lot more bearable when you see her kind of realizing, you know, what she's done and that kind of hurt in her eyes. You know that Data thought about that and, you know, cared about that. And then also giving her the chance to make her own decision, because this is a decision that she had to make for herself. I think it was Riker that told her that, you know, told him, told Data that, it, you know, every relationship is a risk and she decided to take this risk. And she did. She's an adult. She can make that decision for herself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Riker did tell him that, but then Riker also said that when it works out, the rewards are far greater than simple friendship, with the biggest grin, I think, of the entire series. Yeah. And practically chuckling and saying, I hope you're about to find that out for yourself, Mr. Data.
Yeah. Riker's just screaming in full testosterone out the words,
mode. Yep.
Sex! Yeah.
But it brings up another question here. So I also feel in this case, it shows that Riker doesn't view Data as just this android who's on the crew, right? He views Data as another one of the guys, right? Which mm-hmm. is showing that there's more to Data than just being a machine, if you yeah. know what I mean.
And that's true of all of his colleagues. I mean, all of his colleagues view him as more than a machine. As he's a friend or a coworker, someone they relate to.
Well, right? Except for Pulaski. Right. Yeah.
But this is season four. We've moved past that now.
Guys, I feel like I have to remind you, never forget. Pulaski banged Riker's dad. Never forget.
Yes, she did.
It's very true.
In every possible universe, right?
In every possible universe. Right. Oh, man. I'm seeing this scene, you know, where it's parallels, right? Where Worf has come back and we're seeing all the alternate realities. And on the view screen, in every situation.
In every single one. Right.
It's always Pulaski with Riker's dad in the background. Sometimes he's got a beard, sometimes he doesn't. You know?
But always with a big grin and a thumbs up.
Yes, exactly.
I want to see that version of Parallels right now. That would have been such a better episode.
There's got to be some fan fiction out there somewhere.
There definitely is.
I'm going to go out there and I'm going to find it as soon as we're done with this.
Because then we could
I know you
have,
got it on your computer there, Sean.
In some of those realities, we could have the gender bender where
yeah.
we do have the female Riker.
Absolutely.
As the
official Trek FM philosopher, there is nothing logically inconsistent about that.
Okay, thank you. We have Zachary's seal of approval.
There you go, certified.
This,
thumbs up.
With this idea. It's Fruling certified.
That's a Riker leg on the
Yet
table.
Get another shirt idea. Man, Aaron's going to be so busy.
Stamp, we'll put on stuff Fruling certified.
That is two Riker legs on the table. There you go.
Wait a minute. Okay. Both legs on the table? That can only mean one thing.
Two Riker legs on the table. Wow.
Wow. Oh, my.
Okay, why don't we transition to the next topic we have, because we're already kind of in it anyway. This section is called Geordi LaForge, Love Counselor. Now, of all the people on the ship to go to first, I know
why Geordi?
Right.
I know it's because Geordi is Data's best friend, but still, Data, do you really think Geordi is the person who's going to be able to give you advice on romance and women?
See, most people would say, Data, get a room. Geordi would say, Data, go to the holiday.
Yeah, it's true. But deep down inside, we're all screaming as Data approaches Geordi for love advice. No, Data, don't do it. That's the single worst right. thing you can do. But then Geordi does a very respectable and honorable thing and says, you know what? I'm not the best person to ask for advice. He gives him the best advice he possibly can.
Ask someone
and tells
else.
Him to go to someone else. Oh my God. Good job, Geordi.
You're right. You are the worst person to talk to about romantic relationships.
Well, this was pretty new at the time. I mean, it hadn't become totally clear yet that this was a pattern for Geordi, right?
I don't know.
That he wasn't really great at romance.
I think we knew enough.
He was getting there, but...
Yeah. Maybe, because we've talked about how for Data, it is like being a teenager and trying to figure out how a relationship might work. Would it have not made more sense for him to go and get advice from Wesley?
That's exactly what I was thinking, actually. I was like, Wesley would be a better person to go to for advice about women. I mean, he has some pretty nice ex-girlfriends.
Yeah, this is really similar to that episode, the Dolphin, right?
Yeah, except for I don't think Lieutenant Desora turns into a furry at any point.
Right. At least we didn't see it happen. I can just see, like, they cut to 10 forward and they pan across and there's Jenna and Data sipping a milkshake together.
Nice. Nice.
I feel like there has to be a meme out there somewhere where it's just Geordi's face and then like hashtag forever alone. Just wah, wah.
Oh, there's got to be.
Well, I was trying to remember if it was this episode or that episode where Worf does the Klingon mating ritual scream.
It's not
the other one, but I thought it was this one. Yeah.
Okay. So Andy, this makes me wonder, do you think that, you know, sometimes people, they have this pact, like, you know, if we're still not married when we're 40, then we'll get married, something like that. Do you think Geordi and Harry Kim have a pact like that?
I don't know who Harry Kim is.
With each other? Oh, that's right. You've not
okay,
watched
sure,
the
you
Oh,
know.
My God.
Because hashtag forever alone.
Yeah. Okay, Chris, are you saying Geordi and Harry have this pact with each other?
Well, I'm just thinking of two Star Trek
that
characters.
Is definitely fan fiction somewhere.
Might need to play that card at some point.
Mm. So. You know, I can see Geordi doing that with somebody, but Harry, of course, had Libby back home. Andy, cover your ears.
Oh, don't worry. In my head, I'm going la, 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 la.
Okay, good, good, good. It'll all make sense when you see it. So he's banking on that, right? For at least a good 5.5 years, the poor guy.
Or one of the Delaney twins.
Yeah, well, yeah. And we all know that that didn't work out so well, poor guy. Because really, his heart was still with Libby, and then he kissed a cow, and it just, the dude just has no chance. But Geordi, yeah, he would definitely have a pact like that with somebody. Now, who? No idea.
It completely depends on what fan fiction you're reading.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, let's think about someone who would be in close proximity, someone who he might spend some time with at work. Argyle?
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. Right. Well, if he gets desperate enough, I suppose.
I mean, you know, Argyle's watching him all the time through the peepholes in the Jeffries
tube.
That's
true. Maybe Argyle's
That's
into
Robin's
it.
Laws number 109. Stay away from Geordi.
Do you think there's an officer on the Enterprise whose job it is to go put tape over Argyle's peepholes?
Every day. And then I just got to do it every 24 hours because Argyle rips it apart and he has to make new ones.
Maybe this is what Picard's fencing officer does when Picard doesn't want to fence. He needs something else to do because it's too boring just to stand down there waiting for Picard to come to fence.
There you go. Yeah. Well, and that's a tough job.
While we're talking about love advice here, we already talked about Riker's advice quite a bit. We didn't mention Worf's advice, which was that Klingons do not pursue relationships. They conquer that which they desire. And I thought that, you know, Worf really changed his tune a lot along the way, especially by the time he gets to Jadzia.
I feel like that's the kind of advice you give someone and then you have to bail them out of jail.
Well,
Worf needs a dose of humility there.
I like the subtext of Worf's advice, which was basically, so help me, if you hurt an officer under my command, I will break you with my bare hands, sir.
Yeah.
Very Worf.
Although Data's the one person on the crew who's stronger than Worf.
Right, yeah. And if you have to prove that somebody is stronger than anybody, you're going to beat on Worf because he's the big
Klingon. Yeah, would it have made more sense if when the aliens come on, they had to kick Data's ass to show that they were tough instead of Worf?
Well, I guess with Worf being the security officer, he's on the front lines. He's supposed to handle it.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily
But I think
Data's
it's more,
job.
It's not because he's the security officer, it's because he's a Klingon.
Yeah, he's just the first one to act, like to react, you know, right. I'm gonna kick your ass, or...
Because in season one, you didn't have to kick Yar's ass to show that you were tough, right? And she was the security officer.
That's because she had shit under control.
Go after the Klingon.
Unless you were cage fighting for someone's inheritance.
That's true. Well, let's face it. Everybody was screwed in that scenario.
And also, let's face it. It's hard to look tough in parachute pants.
That's true.
It's so true. So true.
I love this conversation between Worf and Data, though, because Data starts to walk away and Worf just stands there, and then Data turns back to him and says, I understand. Worf waits for him to turn around and acknowledge him. Mm.
Do you guys agree that writing a subroutine specifically for someone is probably the height of android romance?
It is actually really sweet. And I totally understand why she reacts the way she does. She's like, that's the nicest thing anyone's ever done for me. And I'm like, word. Like, he took the time to, like, specifically design this, like, whole emotional program that's based on what he thinks she'll like. I mean, that's romantic as hell. Yeah, it's too bad that it doesn't work really all that well. But still, yeah. Like, the thought is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't all courting like this, though? I mean, you have your little program and you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Riker has like a book of moves.
It's like everyone's got their script, right?
Book of move, the Riker book of moves.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
You know that's out there.
It's like the playbook.
They sell it on Deep Space Nine.
From How I Met Your Mother. It's just like 500 pages long and all of his moves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it. It's a book with a red cover and it's got three gold pips in it.
Nice. Yeah.
The book of moves.
It's like the Android book of love programming.
but it shows that Data is a very thoughtful Android, because I think most Androids would probably just download some kind of open source love routine and use that.
Ooh.
But Data created his own personalized subroutine for Jenna.
I mean, your average Android is just going to, you know, get something generic. They're not going to tailor it to you.
It's like the Hallmark thing, you know.
Wait, you just go buy
a card and you just sign your name to it. But Data would actually take the time to write a personalized message in that card.
But Data has, Data has Honey, I'm Home.
It's not a good program.
Let's not give him too much credit.
It's not a good program. He's watching reruns of I Love Lucy and his studies.
But it's unique.
It is unique.
I mean, I guess, like instead of buying the card, Data sits down with the construction paper and cuts out the crooked heart, you know?
he put his own contrapuntal melody on it.
Yeah. Well, like you said, Andy, it's really sweet, but the execution is absolutely awful, because Data was doing great until he started trying.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is a great takeaway from this episode. It's a great message. It's, you know, no matter what kind of life form you are, just be you. That alone is enough to attract the right person.
And I mean, Guinan points this out right from the beginning. She's like, you don't have to do anything. Like, she's interested in you. But I mean, I think most of us probably have an insecurity that being you is not good enough. It's kind of nice to know that Data also has that, I guess.
Yeah.
He's emulating
Data
humans
acts
too much.
Just like a human here, right? Where you don't know what to do, and so you try too hard.
Right.
And then that ruins it.
That's exactly what he did, too.
Oh, poor Data.
Poor Data. Poor Data. He had to learn sometime.
As someone who has many stories of trying too hard in years past, I feel Data's pain.
Yeah, I think we all do at some point, right?
If this was said it now, Data would have, like, texted her 200 times right after their first coffee date.
Are you mad at me? Why aren't you answering my messages?
He goes back to his computer console and send her an instant message.
I could see. And then we have a scene where Jenna turns red receipts off.
Yes! Cultural relevance.
Oh, man. So one thing that came to mind earlier, too, when you were talking about emo Data, and then you were also talking about how Jenna is in a better place at the end of the episode, and where does she go from here? I'm picturing them releasing Star Trek episodes like old singles in music where there's a B-side. Like the A-side for In Theory would be what we see here, but the B-side would be Data going all emo.
Awesome.
And we would get
an entire other episode
that follows up. And so every episode would have a flip side.
Well, he's got the pale skin. He's got black hair. You know, he's halfway there.
Can eat chocolate ice cream and listen to All By Myself. Rock a little.
Nice.
Do you think Data has a program where he can just grow his hair as long as he wants?
Well, he grows the beard.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Yes, like overnight.
Which, by the way, when I watched that for the first time, I legit did like a perfect spit take. You know, like it was like right out of like sitcom like history. I just spit my mouthful of wine all over Jerry Cat, and he was not amused.
Oh, poor kitty.
But I was like,
and it's an enviable
Data
beard.
Data has a beard. Data has a beard. Stop everything. Everybody has to know this. It was glorious. So yes, the answer is yes, he could. It would probably be just as ill-advised.
But, you know, Data learns by doing, right? Data's emulating Riker. Riker grows a beard. Data grows a beard, right? Other people get in some romance adventures. Data has to, you know, we all learn by doing, so.
It would have been awesome if in this episode, Data walked down to Jenna's quarters and propped his leg up on the sofa.
I was halfway expecting
Riker.
It.
I was told by does, Riker that this has worked for him in the past.
I want to see Jenna's reaction to that.
Probably similar, where she looks simultaneously worried and a little bit aroused.
yeah, exactly. She's a little concerned and she's also amused and interested.
And she does some great looks in this episode, though. Very nuanced reactions to Data's
It's good stuff, yeah.
When he is explaining all of the thoughts he was having while kissing her, her face was perfect. It was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, tries not to hurt him and gives him that smile and is like, well, at least I was in there somewhere. I'm like, oh, right in the feels.
Ouch.
Got me right there.
Yeah, that's, I think, the moment where it starts to turn, where she realizes, okay, this wasn't such a great idea. This isn't going to work. Because I think she's really trying up until that point. And that's when she realizes there's no going back. It's not going to happen.
But at that point, if Data stopped trying too hard and he just went back to being himself, could he have salvaged the situation?
I don't think so. I think that was the moment she realized that Data doesn't work like her. Like, his thought processes are not like her. He's very different. He's not going to process emotion in the same way, and that it's not going to be right for her. I don't know how you come back from that.
Past the point of no return.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that was the exact point where she friend-zoned him again. Because that was where it was better off anyway.
Well, I mean, the reason that she was attracted to Data in the first place is because he listened to her. And she had just gotten out of a relationship in which the guy she was going out with didn't listen to her, didn't pay enough attention to her, wasn't giving her any emotional support. And Data, just by being who he is, he listened to her, and that was attractive. It was when she realized that he's listening to her while also processing like 20 other things and learning an oboe part for the night, you know, like that she realized that it wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, by the way, Data's oboe, fake oboe playing is much better than his fake violin playing. A+.
Good to
know. I was thinking that an android playing oboe is perfect because an oboe is very difficult to play because you have to really get just the right pressure on those reeds. And an android could calculate exactly the right pressure.
Just like he calculates his kisses.
Yes.
That's true.
Indeed.
But I want to push back on this a little bit, though, because we're all kind of like this, right? And I mean, as we get older, you know, we have jobs, we have careers, we have lives, and you have to have relationships at the same time and find a balance. Any one of us has five other things in our mind at any given point, right? This is just the human condition, I think.
Yeah, but I think that we're able to prioritize those thoughts, and so we can choose to be in the moment and be focused on the person that we love in that moment, whereas for Data, he can't.
Yeah.
By design, he's giving equal weight to everything, pretty much.
Yeah, I have to agree. Humans, I think we're much more capable of being present with that person, whereas with Data, it's no greater or lesser effort to do all those things at the same time. He holds his attention the same no matter what. For us, I'd say it's a lot more difficult.
But with humans, the danger is that we're totally distracted, right? I mean, you can not be in the moment and do some real damage.
Right, but if you're with the right person, and bear in mind, too, this is like their third kiss. Like, right at the beginning of a promising relationship, if you're on your third kiss and you're, like, doing your grocery shopping in your head, that's a breakup moment. You know?
You're right.
Right.
Yeah, that your heart's not really in it at that point, then.
I mean, if they're not, you know, if they're not sweeping you off your feet at that early, oof.
Yeah, forget it.
Isn't 5 years in. This is like 2 days in, right?
Yeah, you're right.
This is like a coffee date later. The emotional equivalent of a coffee date.
But also in Data's mind, there's nothing wrong with giving equal weight to everything because he thinks that I'm still giving her attention, but I can do all these other things at the same time.
Right.
But you see that a lot in relationships, and it works both ways, but I think it's maybe more common where men don't see anything wrong with splitting their attention or maybe not being romantic enough or present enough. And so Data's not really being any different than humans are, except that we have a choice, whereas for him, that same choice isn't really there.
Well, men aren't trained to give the same weight to their emotional state as women are. So, I mean, that's why we have some of those issues there. It's definitely an issue. And, you know, for this particular relationship, I don't even think we could say that Data would be a bad boyfriend for someone else. It's just this particular woman needs more, you know, and it doesn't work. I mean, if you had someone who was very, a woman who was very self-contained, who was very independent, who had a lot of things going on that didn't need a whole lot of emotional validation, maybe that could work. And there are women like that out there. But this particular woman is not built that way.
So who on the crew did you have in mind, Andy?
Actually, you know who I was thinking of, and I hate to say it, but I was like Pulaski.
Pulaski and Data.
Data and Pulaski.
She'd bang that.
Oh, that's perfect, because it seems like they don't like each other, right?
And they're going to have total like rage effing.
They're
yeah.
just trying to push each other away because they're actually madly in love.
Animal.
See, I'm not even saying that. It's just when I was trying to picture who that kind of woman would be, she's who popped in my yeah. head. Like, think about how Pulaski sits down and is like, yeah, I had a bunch of husbands. I'm still friends with them. It was cool. You know, like, she does yeah. have that kind of reserve. But no, I don't think they would be a good couple.
I can't think of anyone on the Enterprise crew, but I do see a parallel here between Kira and Odo's relationship. Because Ooh, Odo, yeah. I mean, he's more emotional than Data, but also the idea of human emotions is alien to Odo. But Kira doesn't need that sort of validation. She's a completely different type of person than Jenna is in this episode. And so that works very well for them.
I mean, everybody has different needs in a relationship. The point is not to like change your needs or change yourself. It's more to find the person that complements them.
Right. Although you could say that Data just needs more experience on the nuances of relationships, you know, to be a little more like himself. Yeah. And then somebody will come along who really appreciates that. And then they're totally compatible. And he's not trying so hard and he doesn't ruin it within 48 hours.
Oh, poor Data.
Yeah, I mean, we've all bit the bullet on the fact that he is emotional, right? So we don't fall in the Data's just a machine camp. I don't think any of us do.
No,
not entirely.
Right, so. None of us do. I mean, at this point, I mean, he's more like a child, right? I mean, he has emotions. He doesn't yet know how to control them or channel them or what to do with them. I mean, obviously, a human child has much more emotion and understands it better right out of the gate than Data does. So I'm not trying to say they don't. But in terms of his growth, he's still very much in a child stage. I could see the Data later on, like if Data had... You've seen all the TNG movies, right,
nope.
Andy?
So I should la-la-la?
Nope. Okay. Okay. Uh-oh. All right. Yeah, you should la-la-la
okay,
for
I'm taking
a moment,
out my headphones. So. Go for
okay.
it.
All right. So if Data had not been killed in Nemesis and he continued on, I can certainly see that Data being able to have a meaningful romantic relationship with a humanoid woman. And at that point, really understanding what it means and what he needs to do. And... You know, I mean, we see that with the Doctor on Voyager by the end. You know, he's a computer program. In fact, he's probably less complicated than Data as an individual being, but he's starting to also learn that nuance of emotion and what relationships are, too.
Mm-hmm. And I would argue that the Doctor learned faster.
Yeah, he did learn faster, of course, yeah.
It seems to me that Data just needs a strong woman who can kind of take him under her wing and teach him a few things and be totally comfortable with his inadequacies. I'm thinking of someone like Tasha Yar.
If
she hadn't died, Data and Tasha Yar would have been perfect.
Absolutely. It's such a shame. Such a shame.
Is it safe?
It's safe. You can come back.
Hi. I'm back.
Hi.
Okay. Well, can I make a few random observations here before we move into the final topics? I noticed a few things here. The quintet playing in Ten Forward, I was curious if the bassoonist felt like the token alien in the group.
I was wondering why there was a French horn in the middle of a woodwind. Okay, sorry.
You always have a horn in a woodwind quintet.
I was wondering why, okay, we saw an alien playing human instruments, but why are there not alien instruments being played by humans?
Racism.
That seems really, yeah.
Racism.
Racist, contrapuntal, classical music. Yeah.
That infuriates me.
Human normativity.
Of course, the way you would do it is that all the aliens would always play human instruments and the humans would always play alien instruments, right?
Right.
That's how they would handle it. I also had a question for maybe for all of you guys, because you are all cat people and I'm not.
I don't know what you're saying.
You know, I was listening to Jeff Foxworthy recently and he said, I still don't understand why cats never throw up in the daytime.
They do if they're punishing you.
Yeah,
well, I was
exactly.
thinking on a starship, like, how does a cat decide when is the right time to throw up on the ship? Because, you know, the day and the night are kind of mixed up.
When
for
it's
them, right?
most inconvenient to you.
Yeah, okay. Really. That's all the timing they need. It doesn't matter day or night.
Yeah,
I don't
right
know what
when
Fox
you have something else to do.
About.
Yeah.
Jerry Cat once puked on my bed while maintaining eye contact so he could make it really right. clear that he was punishing me for taking him to the vet.
Wow.
Right in the middle of a
sadist.
Firefight with the Romulans. Yeah.
That sounds like a cat.
And that was smack dab in the middle of the day.
There you go. That's a cat.
Actually, I was thinking about this and I was like, Data is just like the perfect cat person. Because Spot, if he's not paying attention to Spot, Spot won't care. Spot will be doing his own thing. Spot's going to be like chilling out, sleeping, you know, 22 out of 24 hours a day. Like, he's the perfect cat owner.
And he's always trying out new feline supplements for him because Spot's really picky and cats can be very picky, especially when it comes to food. You have to have just the right fishy taste that they want.
Right. And he practices, you know, rhythmic stroking of his fur, you know, on a regular basis to enjoy the subvocal oscillations.
I'm picturing Data when he retires from Starfleet, you know, he could get a job with IMS. Coming up with good supplements, so he's got so many possibilities.
So yeah, I'm picturing one of those dark matter pockets, like you know, going through Data's quarters and knocking stuff on the floor, and Spot just going crazy, like cat toys everywhere.
Ode to Spot would make a great cat commercial, like jingle.
Yeah, it might not be too bad.
We had who was it? I think it was Calcan, who ran a 2-page ad in my magazine this past summer. It was just a pattern to try to hypnotize the cat. And you were supposed to open up the magazine and just show it to your cat and see how they react to it. And then in the bottom corner, really small, it's like Calcan.
Wow. Okay. My question, did it work?
I don't know. I don't have a cat around to try it out on. It did not work on my coworkers, though.
I'm just amazed Calcan still exists. I don't think I heard that since the 80s.
I'm pretty sure that Jerry Cat would yawn slowly and look away, like very deliberately.
Yeah, probably. What is this crap?
I also played Jerry the music for cats that they've designed, and he was bored by that too. I don't think anything.
Good to know. It's like the Baby Einstein stuff that people did back in the late 90s, you know, to try to make babies smarter. Doesn't work.
I think Jerry is just, you know, the picture of ennui. So, like, nothing will ever get through to him.
So, a couple more random observations I have here. I was thinking that on DS9, what if Keiko had told Sisko that what the station really needed wasn't a school, but a woodwind quintet?
With a French horn.
But there's always a French horn in a woodwind quintet, Dandy.
And aliens.
Yeah. They do a little more jazz on DS9, right?
Yeah.
Classical's not their thing.
And another one that I noticed was that apparently Guinan has begun mixing Saurian brandy with targ milk.
Ew.
Do you think Bones, who loved Saurian brandy, do you think Bones would drink it with targ milk in it?
Okay, neither one of those two liquids in that episode looks like targ milk to me. Is it the green one or the yellow one or the blue one?
I don't think it's either of those because there's something else in there too. But when Data runs down what's in it for her, he mentions targ milk.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Bones would think that's an abomination.
How do you milk a targ, by the way? Do you think it's safe to milk a targ?
I
love that Data
try
can
it.
Just taste that it's targ milk.
I feel like McCoy would be like a purist. He'd be like those whiskey drinkers that would be like, you just put in a drop of water to open the flavor and, you know, ice in it just like ruins everything. How dare you? How dare you do that? I feel like that's the kind of person he would be. So like diluting it at all would probably be offensive.
Right. It's an abomination.
And especially not with a dairy product from Kronos.
Yeah, that's sacrilege entirely. Why ruin a good thing?
It's like that Klingon martini from that episode of Voyager. Gin, vermouth, and a dash of blood wine.
I feel like blood wine is also something that should just be taken purely. Like when Worf goes up to Quark, bartender, blood wine! Just like, don't mess with a good thing. Don't dilute it with other crap.
Do they put targ milk in Ractigino?
That's a good question.
That's a really good question. Maybe.
And then like whip cream.
I think you're a purist, you know.
Sprinkles.
Yeah.
That's where the hipsters go. It's like space Pete's or something, you know.
It's on this. It's on the secret like space box menu.
Yeah, or the coffee bean and targ leaf.
I'm imagining on Kronos, Starbucks expands to Kronos, but they only serve blood wine. And so when you go in to order your blood wine, you know, you need like 20 words to place your order. It's very,
and it's
very
the 24th century, so you can order right from your pad now.
Can I have a blood wine? Yes, no, maybe. Check the box.
Check the box.
Okay, all right. Enough random observations. So last thing to talk about here. You mentioned a moment ago, Zachary, about the dark matter. There was a B-plot in this story. I don't really think there needed to be a B-plot in this story. This really, really felt like one of those... The Star Trek formula is we have an A-story and a B-story. Mm-hmm. We've got to have a B-story. We've got to mix it in here. What do you got? Some pockets of space that make weird things happen on the ship. How are we going to get out? The captain has to risk his life to guide the Enterprise through because no one else on the ship can pilot the shuttlecraft.
Yeah, this makes no sense to me.
And of course,
yeah.
I love Worf's observation when, you know, Data's up there. He's on PowerPoint duty in this episode. And Data's giving the presentation and they're like, it would be very difficult to navigate the Enterprise through here. And then suddenly it's like the light bulb goes on and Worf goes, a shuttlecraft is more maneuverable than the Enterprise. Really, Worf, you think that this little ship's more maneuverable?
I know what
they did. Thanks for the tip.
I know what they did for this B-plot. They were really scraping to come up with something. So I feel like Jerry Taylor just did Star Trek Mad Libs and did the fill in the blank. So, yeah, we have a blank, and blank has to take a blank and solve the crisis.
Well, it's like the Q episode where the moon is falling, right? When we did that on here, we said, you know, they reached into the bag of B-plots and they pulled out the falling moon card. They do that so much on TNG. And my real question here, though, is do you guys think that this episode would be better if there were no B-story and we just focused on Data and the relationship for the entire episode? I mean, there's no reason really why you couldn't do that.
Yeah, short answer is ditch it. It sucked.
Yeah, it's not like the other cast members don't get their due, right? Data gets conversations with all of them. They all chime in about something. So it's still an ensemble cast.
Mm-hmm. Plus, it's not logically approved by... It doesn't have the Fruling stamp of approval. So, right. I mean, really, you should just... You gotta chuck it at that point.
This is the main thing that bugs me about this. I don't mind the fact that there's a B-plot. I don't mind that it's a little silly. We get some great moments out of it, right? Like Picard and Worf stooping down under the captain's desk. That's brilliant. But the thing that doesn't make sense is, you know, why do they have to try to navigate out of this thing at full impulse speed? Why can't they just go really, really slow and not have to have this crazy scene?
Because science-y shenanigans. Shenanigans.
I know. I'm like the worst version of a nitpicker here. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and see, you should be like me and let it wash right over you and take none of it in.
Oh, yeah, I want more warm, fuzzy feelings with Data and Jenna, sure.
I just think that there's so much more you could explore here, and this is an issue I have with a lot of Voyager episodes as well, because Voyager really follows the TNG model of A-plot, B-plot. We have to have both. Sometimes the B-plot supports the A-plot, and when that happens, it's wonderful, and it makes for a really rich story. And then sometimes the B-plot is just there to fill time. And I feel like that's what's happening here. You look at DS9. DS9 often has episodes where you have an A-plot, a B-plot, and a C-plot, but they're all going somewhere most of the time. and they either complement each other or they complement the ongoing story of the series. So you feel like you're getting something out of what's happening each time. But here, every time they go to this whole nebula thing, I just want to have that time back so that we can explore the whole relationship that Data's trying to have and how that affects him and how it affects Jenna and what they're trying to say about us as humans in relationships, as well as the prospect of humans and artificial intelligence having relationships.
Ultimately, if your B plot does not support the themes of the episode, it's bad writing. I mean, it has to do something. It has to either...
It's just filler.
Yeah, exactly. It has to either move your characters forward or move the story forward. But if it does neither of those things, it's bad writing. The end.
Well, this is a little bit of a TNG identity crisis, right? Is it an action sci-fi show or is it a character-driven show?
Mm. Yeah.
It's both. But, you know, they're trying to do both of those things in one episode.
Right. And it almost, like, to the detriment of the show overall by having boring B-plots that don't need to really be there.
See, I don't think the B plot is boring for me. I really think this dark matter thing really is interesting. You get some really interesting stuff that occurs on the ship. The stuff being blown out the window.
But
it's
the theme,
interesting.
Zachary, is that would be interesting if that were the A plot of an episode.
Oh yeah,
right?
In a separate episode. I mean,
the problem
absolutely.
Is that here they just tease you with like some weird things are going on, but they really never delve into it, and therefore it's not interesting in this context.
Right. You leave the nebula, it stops. End of story.
And they even tease you with some things that don't make their way into the episode. Like they mentioned that maybe life could have evolved in a completely different way inside this nebula, right? And they don't explore that thread at all. You know,
now that nice would have been a great A plot in a completely different episode.
Exactly.
I think Data should have at least had a slide about that in his PowerPoint presentation.
Right. Or it could be one of the things that he's thinking about while he's supposed to be courting Jenna.
See, he was distracted.
Now that would have at least tied it in there if he had listed that as one of the things.
There you
that
go. That
about.
One little thing would have done enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing like the SETI at home, you know, calculations in his mind, right?
That would be awesome if like Data is a walking SETI at home.
Right? Data at home, yeah.
Computational power he's not using.
Yep.
Awesome.
I thought for a moment maybe the Enterprise had wandered into the Expanse with all of this weird stuff happening to them, but that's sort of retro. That's looking back. That's retconning TNG post-Enterprise. So,
the thing that I thought right at the beginning when, shenanigans were starting to happen, but we didn't know why, there's a part where Spot gets out and they're like, how did Spot get out? And I was like, that engineer lady was totally going in Data's room and like going through all his stuff. That's how the door opened.
Yeah.
And I was like,
really?
Completely
I totally
thinking
missed that.
They
really?
Were going to go with like a stalker episode, so it was really, really weird. I really called that one poorly.
I gotta say, I've watched this episode 40 times and that has never entered my mind once. I
can probably even pull up my tweets. I was like, that lady did it. She let Spot out. She's stalking Data. This is gonna turn into like Fatal Attraction. Yeah, wrong. Just off just a little bit.
That's awesome, Andy.
I'm first time trekking. I don't know what's happening.
So then Data would be trying to break up with her throughout the episode and she just wouldn't let it happen.
Yeah, basically. That's exactly what I was picturing. I figured that she'd get like really creepily attached and
You'd have totally different music in those scenes where they're there by the torpedoes together, right? The probes, whatever they are.
I could see Jenna as the overly attached girlfriend in a different story. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, okay. So I guess we've passed an hour, so we should wrap up with our final thoughts on this episode and our rating. So Zachary, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, you know, this is not, it's not the deepest TNG episode, but it's one of my favorites. I'm a romantic. It's a romantic episode. It's just a sweet character story. You know, you can feel the emotions dripping from Jenna. You can feel the emotions dripping from Data, even though he's not supposed to have them. You know, like we said, there's some problems with the structure of the story. The B plot doesn't really make sense in a lot of ways, but it's always going to be one of my favorite TNG episodes. It's just a sweet character episode. This is what I love about these characters. These are characters I feel like I know deeply because of moments like this. So even despite the issues with the plot structure, I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 Chief O'Brien socks on the floor.
Which reminds me, when they were having that conversation and Keiko was talking about Miles's socks, I was thinking that somewhere down the road, I think that Jules has this same conversation with Miles.
No doubt.
Miles, pick your socks up, man.
You knew it happened.
They're doing each other's laundry.
All right. How about you, Char?
Yeah, I like this episode. It's a lot of fun. It's great to see Data go through his first real relationship and all the trouble and the nuances that come with that. I mean, you know that in the end, whether you've seen this episode yet or not, that it's not going to work out, but you have to know how it's going to happen. And they really portray this very nicely. I do agree that the B plot is kind of a snore fest. It's really not that important to everything else, and they could have spent that time so much better exploring what was going on between Data and Jenna. It was much more interesting. So I think there's some great takeaways from this. I think the be yourself is some of the best relationship advice you can give anybody. Note to the Enterprise crew members. And speaking of that, one of my favorite things about this episode was Data going to all of his friends for advice. And just the various takes that they have on all of that. And I love the fact that Troy really had the most profound word in all of this. I mean, I think that's just about the only scene that she is in this episode. I mean, she's not on screen very much, but what she said is absolutely true. It all comes full circle. Jenna really is going to have to do a lot more introspection. She's just starting to. When she breaks up with Data, she realizes now that, man, I've been in some crappy relationships. And, you know, for her sake, I hope she kind of just toned it down on the dating for a little while. Got to know herself a little bit, get herself together, and then find a good guy. Because she really didn't seem to have it too together while she was with Data. And poor Data, he had to be the rebound guy. But it was still a really good experience for him. So I'm going to give this one 2 Riker legs on the table.
Ooh, high praise. High praise.
Indeed.
So how about you, Andy?
I like this episode. I wouldn't say I love it, but it's solidly done. At least the A plot is. I think it's good character growth for Data and just in general, well-crafted. If they had added to the B plot or cut it out entirely and just focused on the A plot in a more significant way, I probably would have liked it more. But as it stands, I will give it 4 out of 5 PowerPoint slides of science shenanigans.
Nice. Excellent.
Well, I agree with what all you guys have said. I personally would rather see just the A plot fleshed out more or a different B plot that actually has something to do with what Data is exploring. So because the B plot really feels like wasted airtime for me, I can't really give it the highest score. Although I really love the episode and I love the Data part of the story. And I think Brent Spiner did a fantastic job of conveying, you know, all the different emotions that Data was feeling and the things that he was trying. Shows how versatile Brent Spiner is. And Michelle Scarabelli, who played Jenna, she did a really nice job too, I think, in this episode. So we also didn't mention that Patrick Stewart directed this episode. It's always nice when they have one of the actors behind the camera.
He did great.
And just a fun episode. So good recommendation, Zachary. And I had a really fun time talking about it with you guys today. I'm going to give it an unexplored poltergeist.
Oh my.
All right. So before we let you guys go, Andy, tell everyone where they can find you around the network and the interwebs.
The easiest place to find me is on Twitter at First Time Trek, where I'm first time trekking my way through Star Trek. I am on the second season of Deep Space Nine. And then you can also find me on Women at Warp on the network, where 4 women talk about the portrayals of women on Star Trek.
So you're just on season 2 DS9 now.
I know, I thought you were a little further along. I'm sorry. I'm trying. I'm actually going to be probably doing 2 or 3 episodes tomorrow, so I'm trying to pick about my pace. Woo-hoo. Again.
Great. And Zachary, how about you?
Well, you can find me as one half of Trek FM's relatively new show on Star Trek and philosophy, Metatreks, along with Mike Morrison, my co-host. And in that show, we talk about all of the deeper issues in Star Trek, philosophy and sociology and psychology, all of the meta issues in Star Trek. And so if you want to talk philosophy with me, you can find me in the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listener group. And you can also find me on Twitter. My handle there is just my name, Zachary Fruhling. That's ZachariFruhling.
Awesome. So yeah, the discussions you have on Metatreks is pretty much the exact opposite of what we did today, right? You guys don't talk about cats throwing up around the ship or Argyle drilling holes in the wall or anything like that, right?
Well, we've had some shenanigans already. we've gotten ourselves in some trouble already. So
okay.
So me and Andy can't come on and just totally trash the show. Is that it?
Right. We try to keep it serious, but you know, we have our moments.
Maybe sometime you need to bring Char and I on to add some filth.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's like you guys bring me on here for the comic relief. So, yeah. You know, who'd have thought?
It'll be the philthosophy of Star Trek.
Hey!
That's
an episode that needs to happen, Zach.
Yeah, the sex issue of Metatreks, right, is coming. So, yeah.
Metatreks, just wait. After dark.
That's right. The smut of Star Trek.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Well, Chris, that was a lot of fun talking with Andy and Zachary about In Theory. I think that Andy and I are a very dangerous combo, and you took an incredible risk letting us both come on the same podcast. But I thank you for it because it was a really good time.
I think you guys did a nice job of restraining yourselves. And like I said, I think I said it at the beginning on air, you know, I've had you and Jenny Zell on together many times, so I can handle it.
Well, if nothing else, you're used to it.
I'm used to it. Yeah, it was a really fun discussion today. When Zachary recommended In Theory, I remembered what the story was about, but I hadn't seen it in quite a long time. And so I'm glad that it gave me a chance to rewatch it because it was just so much fun. And I always love watching Brent Spiner in those episodes where he gets to really play around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the same thing happened with me as well. I haven't watched this one in good quite while, and this was actually the first time that I saw it in the nice high-definition Blu-ray quality. And yeah, so that was a nice thrill. See,
I didn't get to do that, even though I have the Blu-ray. I had so many other things going on with work yesterday and all this past week that I had to watch this on the train on the way home last night after midnight, after I did the little print screening at Warner Brothers. So I didn't rip my Blu-rays because the files are just too huge if you do that. So I have every single episode of Star Trek on a little small external hard drive that I carry around all the time. So I was able to just copy that file over onto my MacBook and watch it, but it was the DVD version. So I still have not been able to enjoy this in high def.
Well, you really should, because it does look very nice, and you can see incredibly cool little details like Picard and the shuttlecraft.
Well, let me ask you, do Data's come-on lines work any better in high definition?
No, I'm afraid they don't. In fact, they might actually be a little worse because Data's facial expressions are much more crisp, and he comes across as that much more creepy.
Yeah. It really exposes the flaws in the strategy. That's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, it was a fun discussion, but it's just one of many, many things we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at what else you may have missed on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
They just happen to come at just the right time.
Right,
or just
the wrong
the
right time.
Time
for it to be dangerous.
Like literally, like not even like that day, but like 2 minutes before this happens.
The Ready Room.
Here's one more thing I want to throw out here for you guys. Recasting this episode, because I know you guys like to do this on To the Journey with things, with series and such. I think that Ma'ab should be played by Will Ferrell.
To the journey!
Bravo to the holodeck.
Bravo to the holodeck. Bravo to science!
Yes, for coming to the truth.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's like, yeah, that's, I mean, commentary, Trek Stars. We can say that's, you see, it's a commentary on Trek Star. No, it's because our other show is called Commentary Track Stars, okay? And we were being cute.
The 602 Club.
I had a real fear when they first introduced that character that she was going to be the opposite of what you had just described, Matthew, that she would be too young for Bond, that she would be a little wet behind the ears, that we were going to fall back into all these cliches that I thought we had just broken by having the Monica Bellucci character there. But I was so relieved that they constructed somebody who had a lot of depth.
Women at War.
So we went in and pitched, and I have to say that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. I have scrubbed in on brain surgery. It did not frighten me as much as waiting outside Gene Roddenberry's office getting ready to go in and pitch to him.
Meta Trex.
That would have just been a grand moment if, George Takei would have played Tuvix, you know, and when the transporter accident happens, he's standing there in those colorful clothes and just says, oh my.
Oh my.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. Of course, we're in iTunes, where we're a featured provider with Apple. And in fact, at the moment, Apple is highlighting us as the highlighted network on the front page of the podcast section. They have a section called This Week On. And currently in the US store, if you go to the podcast front page and look down at the bottom, there's a row. It says This Week on Trek FM. Got all of our shows lined up right there. So some really great exposure, and we really thank Apple for all their support.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you, iTunes.
Now, if you're not an Apple user, you can find us in many other places. There's Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, SoundCloud. You can go to our website at trek.fm, and you can stream the shows from the pages there. You can download MP3 files. You can get the RSS links and put those into anything that you like. You may have heard the news that Google is going to be supporting podcasts now officially through the Google Play Music Store. We have already set up all of our stuff there. It's not available to the public yet. There is no announcement yet as to what date Google is going to open that up to the public. But we do have all of the Trek FM shows already in place there. So soon, if you're an Android user, you'll be able to get us through the Google Play Music Store as well. And of course, this show, The Ready Room, you can also get on Spotify. And hopefully in the future, when Spotify fully opens up their podcasting platform, then our other shows will get invited in as well. I'd also like to take a moment to thank our associate producers here on The Ready Room. Of course, Zachary, who you just listened to, giving his stamp of approval, Fruling approved, two parts of In Theory. And there's also Renee Roberts, who is a wonderful woman who has been with the network since almost the beginning. She is a huge supporter of Trek FM. We really love Renee and thank her so much for her support. And you can find Renee on Twitter at @Mares_1701. So send her a thank you and let her know how much you appreciate her helping us get our shows out to you every week. She's a really wonderful person. Thank you so much,
she
Renee.
Is. She's great.
And if you would like to become an associate producer and also help out with the network and just help us cover the costs of producing all these shows, you know, we do 2 or 3 shows a day, I believe it is now, with 20 shows we have here on the network. You can support us through Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm and you can find out everything that you need to know there. We recently rewrote our perk levels, so you can see what those do now in terms of the breakdown. And we did that because we created a new website called Patron Zone at patron.zone. That's the actual URL. And that's available to all of our patrons at the $5 per month level and higher. And it's a central location for all of our perks. Of course, there's wallpapers and avatars and ringtones, some other exclusive comment. Sometimes we'll throw up a video scene from behind the scenes here as we record. And also, we do early releases of shows there. So often you can get a show a day, 3 days, sometimes even a week before it comes out to the public. And you can even download the MP3 file of it right there as well. And that's all available to patrons at $5 and up per month. And of course, we have other perks at higher levels. You can be part of the Patrons Roundtable, get on mic, talk Star Trek with fellow listeners and Trek FM hosts, all sorts of things. And it's really critical because we are a listener-supported network, so we do need your help. So please join all the wonderful patrons that we have already. at patreon.com/trekfm. And we really, really thank everyone for their support of the network. So, Char, when you're not, you know, trying to figure out how you would react if Data wrote a special subroutine just for you, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on To the Journey.
To the Journey!
Woo!
See, I got it because last time you got so upset at how we missed it.
I was ready. It's just you, so that makes it a little easier. I only have to cue one person. Yeah, thank you. You can find me there with co-host Tristan Riddell, and new episodes drop every Thursday. We talk all things Voyager. We have a great time doing it. We have all sorts of interesting ways that we take on it. Like you mentioned, the episode comparison earlier. We have all sorts of things that we like to do. We do rewrites. We have our lists. And we have a couple of new things that might be coming down the pipes. So if you haven't tuned in a little while, you might want to tune in again. Because we might be amusing. You never know.
You guys are always amusing, or certainly entertaining.
Oh, well, we try. We try. Thank you. Well, we try. But
you guys
have
get all those
really...
reviews of people saying, I don't even like Voyager, but I like To the Journey. So,
and that is the hugest compliment you could possibly pay us, because even if you don't appreciate Voyager that much and you listen to us anyway, wow. Hey, we're doing something right if we can do that. So that's great. But otherwise, you can find me on the Twitter, and my handle is OTheProfanity. And yes, you guessed it, it contains profanity.
Which is why you have to control yourself here on the show, and why it's dangerous to have you and Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I try, and yeah, me and Andy, I mean, you thought me and Jenny were bad? Well, me and Andy are, I think, just as potent of a combo. We're really going to pursue that Trek FM after dark.
That's going to be interesting, for sure. Oh,
you bet it's going to be.
It may be a little bit scary, but we'll see.
We're going to make Landru blush like he's never blushed before.
I think just the idea of the show will make Landru blush.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, but there's so much more.
Because he knows what everyone will be getting into by listening. So.
Right, right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think we are going to pursue that in earnest. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me here on the network doing a number of other shows. You can, of course, find me on The Orb with Matthew Rushing, talking about Deep Space Nine all the time. I also sometimes do Hyper Channel, which is a very short news show. I say it's very short. It's usually very short. The last episode that we did, where Matthew, Norm Lau, Mike Schindler, and I got together to talk about the new series announcement, was like an hour and 20 minutes. Very unusual.
Mm-hmm. But it was.
It was wonderful that we were able, on the day of the announcement here on the network, to put out 3 hours worth of discussion of the announcement. An hour and a half, roughly, there with the four of us, and then Larry Nemechek and I doing another hour and a half here on the Ready Room on the previous episode, episode 190.
Yeah, so that was really good, by the way. That finally set the record straight on a lot of things for as little as we did know about the series and still don't know.
Yeah.
You guys really nailed it. So kudos.
I think fans, they get so caught up in what's going to be on the screen and what they want that they forget that this is ultimately just a business for CBS. And so you really do have to look at it from the business perspective first and foremost.
Right.
So,
just in the same way that sports is a business, entertainment is also very much a business. And it doesn't really matter that much what we want or envision the show to be. We're ultimately not the creators. And we have so much more that we have yet to learn about this series. They're just getting started.
Yeah, there's really nothing yet, so
no,
long way to go. So yeah, so that's Hyper Channel, and then also I do Continuing Mission from time to time, which is a show about fan films and independent productions. And then if you want to read my writing about Star Trek, you can find that on the official website at StarTrek.com. I have a column there called Trekspectives. Just search for my name, C. Brian Jones, and you can find it right there. Speaking of which, that's my username on Twitter, C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's also my name on Facebook and pretty much everywhere else. And you can find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to chat with me about Star Trek over there. So I hope you'll join me. And lastly, don't forget about our store, which we're opening up. Again, trek.fm/store is probably the easiest way to get there, because then you can see a grid of the art designs and you can click through any of those. And it'll take you over to Redbubble, or just go to redbubble.com/people/trekfm, or go there and type trekfm into the search field and it'll all come up. And we really have just really awesome products for you guys there. So Shar, thank you so much for all your work on getting that set up. And thank you to Aaron for all the wonderful designs.
Yeah, you bet.
So everyone go check that out. And until the next show, I'm going to wander back down engineering and just see if I can get a little bit more romantic advice from Jordy, because even though, you know, I've been married for 19 years, he might still have something to teach me.
I think he's just going to tell you to ask somebody else, but hey, it's worth a shot. I think it's time to stick a sock in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Recording.
Data's rebound pants. Because he is the rebound guy. You guys know that, right?
Yes.
Totally,
oh, yeah, definitely.
Poor guy.
It's classic.
It
Riker's
is.
Riker's go for it pants.
Oh, you stole mine. That was mine.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I got no backup.
Yeah. Riker has these pants, and like right across the back, right across his ass, it says, just go for it.
I thought that was on the crotch.
Well, it'd be hard to read if it was on the crotch.
That's the whole idea, is to get you looking.
Okay.
See?
Well, I'm sure Riker would say that he doesn't need any text printed on his pants to get the ladies looking.
He might be right.
That's true enough. He just swings his leg over a chair and, you know, our eyes naturally go to one place.
That's what he wants.
Just a second, something's going on here. You guys keep talking.
Okay. So yeah, I'm not sure if the language on the crotch helps or hurts that idea. Like if that helps, like entice, like, oh, what do your pants say? And then you look, or do you really need that? I mean, he's just going to put his leg up, no matter what.
Sounds like something from Space Victoria's Secret, like pink across, you know.
He should be the male model for Space Victoria's Secret. That would be awesome.
I also started to notice that he like puts his crotch in everybody's eye line whenever possible.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure that's intentional.
Yeah. It definitely is.
Yeah.
Well, he's taller than everyone, right?
He puts his leg over Marina Sirtis. Come here, Imzadi.
Okay. Let's
I guess we better do the show.
Yeah. Okay, here we go.